This Is Your Life, episode 15. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? Hello and welcome to another episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, we're going to be talking about organizational alignment, one of my favorite topics, and I'm going to share with you three key disciplines that you must practice in order to achieve it and maintain it. And I don't care if the context of your leadership is your family, your small business, a large corporation, a network of freelancers or volunteers, or a church or ministry, you need to know these three disciplines and practice them faithfully if you're going to be successful. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Dynamic Communicators International, producers of the SCORE, Launch, and Platform conferences. These unique events are designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. And you can find out more information at dynamiccommunicators.com. So let's talk about alignment. In my experience, weak leaders blame their followers for a lack of alignment. Strong leaders, on the other hand, know that it's their responsibility to create it. Alignment is not one of those things that just happens. It's created. That's an important distinction, I think, for you to make in your own mind. But years ago, I was making a major presentation to a prospective author back when I was just beginning in the publishing business. And my boss was there, as was my boss's boss, or the big boss. But our goal was to sign the author and win his business. And everyone on our team was nervous, especially me, since I was the one doing the presenting, and it was one of my first major presentations in front of a best-selling author that we were trying to acquire for our publishing company. But prior to that meeting, I had shared my presentation. I mean, it was a nicely bound presentation. It had slides and the whole nine yards. But I shared it with my boss. He reviewed it carefully. He offered some really helpful feedback. And once we were both happy with it, he shared it with the big boss. And the big boss didn't comment, so we both assumed he was fine with it. And as it turns out, that was kind of his typical MO. But as I was actually making the presentation, I could tell that the big boss was uncomfortable. You know, just the way he looked, I don't know, I just sensed it in the air. But he didn't say anything, but he was visibly agitated. And I just sensed that we weren't aligned. But he remained quiet. So after the presentation, the prospective author asked me several direct questions, and I provided what I thought were simple and honest answers. And my immediate boss, who was there, chimed in a few times to agree or just to amplify on what I'd already said. But the author seemed satisfied, and in fact, he gave us permission to proceed with the contract. In other words, it was pretty much a done deal. But he expressed his enthusiasm about doing business together, and you know, we shook hands and we flew out, we left. But I was proud of the outcome. And my boss was happy about it. And we moved on to the next thing. And I think the big boss flew from there somewhere else. So we didn't see him immediately after that meeting. But a few days after the meeting, the big boss sends me a blistering memo. And this was back in the days before email. I know it's hard to imagine, but there was a time when there was no such thing as email. But he copied my boss and sent it directly to me. And the bottom line was, he wasn't happy with the financial arrangement that I had proposed at the meeting. And he challenged my motives, even going so far as to ask if I was somehow in alliance with the other side. And it really, really hurt me. In fact, it was demoralizing, and I almost quit my job as a result of it. But here's what I got from that looking back. And although it was painful at the time, the experience was very instructive, particularly about this issue of alignment. As a leader, I'm responsible for creating organizational alignment with my team. So if something slips out of alignment and I'm unhappy with the outcome, then I've got to ask a very important question. And that is this: what was it about my leadership that created this outcome? And I want to tell you, if you want to grow in your leadership, this is a critically important question, a question you should be asking yourself constantly as things happen in your organization. What was it about my leadership that created this this outcome? And by the way, that's both positive and negative. You can take credit for the things that happen that are good, but you've got to take full responsibility when things don't turn out how you intended. And this is something I'm sure that the big boss in my story example never asked himself. He was just in blame mode instead of asking himself, what was it that he didn't do? And despite the fact that he had a chance to weigh in the preparation before we made the presentation. He didn't do it. And then when things didn't go like he wanted, he got upset. And I was not that pleased either, frankly, with his response. But as a leader, you can create alignment in your team by practicing three key disciplines. And again, I just want to remind you that this is not just for people who are leading large businesses. It works in small business. It works with freelancers and volunteers. It works in the ministry. I spent 6 years in the ministry, so I've been in that situation. It works in your family. Anywhere you're trying to create alignment, you need to practice these three disciplines. So discipline number one is the discipline of contact. Now look, alignment is not an event. It's a process. Teams go in and out of alignment. It's not like you just accomplish it once and then you can check it off your to-do list and you're done with alignment. No, teams go in and out of alignment, and keeping your team aligned takes work. It takes constant work, and you're not going to keep your team aligned unless you have frequent contact with them. And that's what I mean by the discipline of contact. They're going to do the best they can with what you give them. So if you don't spend time with them, it's inevitable that they're going to make decisions that you're uncomfortable with. And that's essentially what happened in the story that I told about the big boss. He had an opportunity to weigh in. He could have met with me before the meeting, which, by the way, I would always urge you to do when you've got a big presentation, is meet with your team, make sure everybody's in alignment before you go on the field and play the game, as it were. But he didn't do that. And if you don't spend time with people, again, it's inevitable. They're going to make decisions you're uncomfortable with. But here's the thing. It's your responsibility to initiate this contact. You're the leader. You're leading the team. You're the quarterback on the field. It's your job to initiate this contact. And you can do this in a variety of ways. You can do it in your regular one-on-one meetings, staff meetings, just by walking around. But it's the discipline of contact. The second discipline is what I would call the discipline of communication. Contact is not enough. You've got to communicate. Okay, this like is obvious, but I meet a lot of leaders that act as though this weren't true. People cannot read your mind. They need to know what you expect. They need to understand your expectations. What are the outcomes that you're trying to produce in this project, or with these goals, or with this particular cause, or whatever it is? They need to understand explicitly what your expectations are. They also need to understand overall the organization's mission and vision. You need to verbalize it over and over and over and over again. You cannot speak the vision too much. Andy Stanley says that vision leaks, and I think he's exactly right. You've got to keep filling up the bucket, the vision bucket, over and over again, because your people forget it. They get so caught up in the daily activity of the organization that they forget about the vision. They get disoriented. They get organizational vertigo. And your job as a leader is to keep speaking into that, the vision that keeps them connected to the larger picture. Somebody once told me, and I think this is right, is talk until you're sick of hearing yourself talk about the vision and you're about half done. In other words, double it. Talk till you're sick of hearing yourself talk about the vision and really you've only just begun. Double it and keep talking about it. And here's the thing. If you don't like something, you need to speak up. Before you get into a high-stakes situation where dialogue is happening in real time, and if something sneaks out that you weren't prepared for, or one of your people says something because you weren't prepared or didn't discuss it, own it. You can have a constructive conversation with them after the fact, and maybe they were out of line, or they were naive, or they were overstepping their bounds, but you can talk about that after the fact in a creative conversation or a creative criticism conversation. But it's not really fair to them or to you to do this after the fact and second guess their motives and judge them essentially for something you didn't do on the front end, which was to create alignment. That's your job as the leader. Discipline number three is the discipline of connection. Communication is not even enough. Yeah, you've got to have the discipline of contact. You've got to have the discipline of communication, but you must practice the discipline of connection. Listen to this. For true alignment to take place, your people have got to know and trust your heart. They got to know and trust your heart. They got to be committed to your success and the success of the team. And you may be tempted to think that you're entitled to their full engagement by virtue of you employing them. You're not. You can buy their presence, but you can't buy their heart. You've got to earn it. People will show up. They'll go through the motions. They'll nod when they're supposed to nod. They'll say what they're supposed to say. But that's way, way different than having true commitment that comes from the heart. And alignment is one of those things that has to come from the heart. You're not just after agreement. You're after alignment, which is a very different thing. And I would just urge you to consider the distinction between those two things. We get in meetings sometimes and people agree, but they really haven't bought into the vision. They haven't bought into the project. They're not aligned. In other words, they're not willing to exert their blood, sweat, and tears to make it happen. They're not willing to take a bullet for the team because they're not aligned. They may be in agreement. They're just not committed from the heart level. So you've got to have the commitment or the buy-in at the heart level. And you can only create a connection and thus alignment when you open your heart and let other people in. And I find one of the best ways to do this is to talk about the why. And you've heard me say this on this podcast, and if you've been reading my blog, you know that I say this a lot. When people lose their why, they lose their way. It's really easy to do. People forget what's at stake. They forget why they're doing something. I remember one time at Thomas Nelson, this may have been 2007, 2008, we had a very audacious goal for that year. And rather than talking about it in corporate speak, I got the executive team together. And actually, this was about 50 or 60 of our vice presidents. We got them together. And I just talked about the why it was important that we accomplish this goal. And honestly, it had very little to do with the finances. I mean, certainly we expressed it in terms of a financial goal, but that was just a number. It was really about us growing as a team, accomplishing something significant in terms of making a dent in the universe and making an impact on our industry. It was really about us being able to earn bonuses for our entire team so that people would be able to do the things that they dreamed about financially as families. And I just talked like that. I just talked about the why of why we were pursuing this goal and why it mattered, because I wanted to connect with them. It wasn't manipulation. It was heartfelt, and I meant every word of it. So three disciplines: the discipline of contact, the discipline of communication, and the discipline of connection. Alignment is critical if you want to get the right things done and move your organization forward in the most effective and efficient way possible. And it's not something that's going to happen on its own. As a leader, you've got to take the initiative to create it. So let me ask you this question. Is your team aligned? Think about the project that you're working on right now, the major initiative that you've taken on as a team. Is your team aligned? What can you do today to create that alignment? If you want to comment on this episode, please go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/015, as in episode 15, michaelhyatt.com/015. I had a few questions come in on this topic when I posted them on Twitter and when I mentioned at the end of the podcast last week. So I want to take those. I had the first question from Nick Cook. Take it away, Nick.
Hi, Michael. My name is Nick Cook, calling from Columbus, Ohio. I'm just getting started blogging and building a personal platform at whattheworldneglects.com. Michael, my question for you in terms of aligning teams is this, is what were some of the primary personal growth areas you had to improve in? What were some of the primary ways you had to change in your journey from being a beginning leader to being an experienced leader when it comes to aligning teams? I'm personally a young leader. I'd like to hear some of your feedback on changes and improvements that you think are necessary to get effective at actually aligning a team well. So look forward to your response. Thank you.
Nick, great question. As a young leader, I realized that I was an introvert. And frankly, I saw meeting with other people as something that was inefficient and largely a waste of my time. And I had to learn that we created the vision most effectively when we created it together. So I had to blow off efficiency in one sense in order, or for the sake of ownership in a very real sense. So I had to learn to get the team together and create the vision together so that we had ownership in the vision. Another thing I had to learn as a young leader was to keep speaking the vision. And I'm telling you, I haven't always done this well. There have been times that I forget to speak it, or frankly, I get tired of hearing it myself. So I think that everybody else is tired of it, but they're not getting tired of it. They're not getting tired of it because they're getting the vision beat out of them on the battlefield as they're encountering day-to-day problems. So you have to keep speaking it, as I already said. I think you also have to keep calling people to the vision and calling them to step up and perform. And this was not easy either, because I felt like maybe that I was pushing a little bit too much, or that I was being a little too aggressive. But I learned that people will step up when you expect them to step up, when you call them to step up. And I can think of one meeting in particular that we had where we were very close. It was in August, I don't know, maybe about 7 or 8 years ago. It was in August when it was a very big month for us. We were shipping into the fall selling season, preparing for Christmas. And it looked like we were going to miss the month by a couple million dollars because we couldn't get the orders out of the warehouse. And I remember sitting in an executive committee meeting and asking our distribution manager, I said, what would it take to make this possible? That failure is not an option, you know, to steal a line from Apollo 13. Failure is not an option. We've got to get these orders out the door. We committed to the board. We committed to ourselves. We've got to stand for this and make it happen. And it was amazing to see what happened just by asking that question, because the guy that was running that business, running the distribution business, wanted to be a hero. He stepped up, his people made it happen, and it was awesome. But it was because I asked the question, and it was outside of my comfort zone. And as I've said on this podcast before, most of the solutions to your problems are outside of your comfort zone, but I was willing to step out there. And it's not always easy, but it's always important. By the way, another thing that I went through in terms of training that was enormously helpful to me in terms of learning about alignment, I took my whole team through a course put on by Gap International called the Alignment Intensive. It was phenomenal. It was about a week long. It was in Philadelphia, and I'll have a link in the show notes to where you can get more information about this, but it's not cheap, but it is great because we all worked on it together. It gave us a common language to talk about alignment, and we began to work on some real life problems in the context of that seminar, along with about 80 other people from all kinds of different industries. So it was just huge in learning how to create alignment on demand. The next question comes from Lawrence Wilson. Lawrence?
Hi, Michael. This is Lawrence Wilson from Fishers, Indiana. My blog is called Suburban Pastor, and you can read it at lawrencewilson.com. My question is, how do you create alignment among team members that you inherited from a previous leader, and they still have some loyalty to that other leader's vision? Love the podcast, and I look forward to hearing your answer. Thanks.
Lawrence, that also is a great question, and I inherited a similar situation at Thomas Nelson because my predecessor, Sam Moore, was really kind of the founder of the company in the sense that he had bought the company from the English company, the Scottish company, and had really built it up in the U.S. He'd been the CEO for 47 years, so he had a long and illustrious career at Thomas Nelson, and I was, you know, his handpicked successor, and I was the guy that had to take it over after him. And there was a lot of allegiance, a lot of loyalty, a lot of culture that he had created just by virtue of his own charisma and his own behavior. And it was all good. But I think one of the first things that you have to do if you're going to influence sort of this these people that have this loyalty to a previous leader is you've got to respect the past. You cannot disrespect it. If you do that, they'll resist and they'll get even more hardened in the changes or against the changes that you're trying to make. So I would say first and foremost, respect the past and acknowledge their loyalty to the past and to your predecessor and see that as a good thing, because that same loyalty, if you're skillful enough to transfer it to yourself, will serve you well. And it's a good character trait. I mean, we all want people that follow us, that are loyal to us, that are faithful when we're not present, that speak well of us when we're not present, that do the things that we want to do or have done in the way that we want to have them done. So that's a good quality. And I think you need to speak to that and to acknowledge it. Then your role as a leader is to enroll them in your vision, enroll them in a new vision. If they don't get enrolled, again, I would say, what is it about your leadership that's keeping them from getting enrolled? I think you've got to be inventive. You've got to be creative. You've got to be compelling. You've got to have a ton of reasons lined up in order to convince somebody to enroll in your vision. That's your job as a leader. Their job is not necessarily, and by the way, if I were talking to them, I'd give them a different message. But in talking to you, I want to say it's your responsibility. Assume that it's 100% your responsibility. And then I would call for the question. You know, once you've done all that work, once you've explained the vision, once you've explained all the reasons why, once you've enrolled them in the process of owning it, then I would just flat out ask them, can you align with this vision? And I ask them, and I wait. And there are many times that I did that with my own executive team at Thomas Nelson, where I went around the table on whatever initiative it was we were taking on and just say, look, okay, guys, can you align with this? I'm not asking if you're in agreement with it. I'm asking, can you align with it? And by the way, just footnote here, there are things that you can align with that you don't agree with. There are many times I could say to my teammates, you know what? I don't agree with the direction the boss is going. I mean, obviously, we're not talking about a moral issue, but I don't agree necessarily with this strategic or tactical decision that he's making, but I'm in full alignment with him. I am supporting him 100%. But I would ask people if they could align with it and give it some time. You know, the shift of loyalty from one team or from the team to a team leader just takes time. And ultimately, if they can't make that shift, and this is art, not science, but if they can't make that shift, you may need to replace them. And I had to do that at Thomas Nelson with a couple of people that just, for whatever reason, just could not shift their loyalty. And I felt like I did a good job in trying to explain what it was that we were trying to create, what the new environment called for, what we were trying to accomplish as a team, and they just couldn't get on board. And so I had to ask them to leave. And sometimes, unfortunately, as leaders, that's part of our job is to do that. The next question comes from Stephen Robles.
Hello, my name is Stephen Robles, and I'm calling from Lakeland, Florida. My personal website is stephenrobles.com. My question is regarding team alignment that you had posted asking for questions for your upcoming podcast. I work for the media team. I had a large church, and I truly believe that leadership and those above me are doing things the correct way and have great vision and are easy to follow. And my question is, the peers in my team do not hook up with the vision as I believe they could be, and maybe a little difficult. I'd like to know if anything I can do or if there's something I can be responsible for amidst my team to help create that alignment or unity, or is that completely up to leadership, or how do I deal with that disconnect? So I appreciate any help, and I love what you do. Thank you.
Stephen, that's an awesome question, and I want to speak to you as a team member, not as a team leader, because I spoke to the team leaders earlier, and I said it's 100% your responsibility, and I want to say to you as a team member, it's 100% your responsibility. Now, we know it's not really 100% your responsibility, but there's a lot that you can do to influence team alignment. There's a lot also you can do to destroy team alignment. But one of the most important things you can do is verbalize your alignment. Don't just let people wonder whether you're committed, whether you're aligned. Go ahead and verbalize it. Just say, you know what? I'm committed to that. And again, just to use my own example, there were situations where when I was working for Sam Moore that I didn't agree with a specific strategic direction or a tactical decision that he was making. And that was fine. I didn't have to agree with everything. But I was in alignment with it, and I verbalized that to my colleagues. One of the things I think also you can do is be loyal. And by that, I mean, refuse to gossip. And I've been in organizations, you've probably been in them too, where people are always talking in a negative way about the boss. And I think they do it because it's a cheap way to get a connection with other people. You know, you kind of complain about it, and the other guy says, yeah, I know, I don't really like him either, or I don't agree with this. And it's just kind of a cheap, easy, artificial way to connect, but it's never effective and it never moves the organization forward. So I would say be loyal. And there were times in my past when somebody was talking about the boss in a negative way and I just changed the subject or I excused myself because I knew it wasn't productive. Plus, here's a key thing. If you're leading at any level, if you engage in that kind of behavior, you know what you're doing? You're training your people to be disloyal. And it happens in organizations all over the world because people will replicate the behavior that you exhibit. This is why culture gets created by the behavior of leaders. Whatever they do, whatever they affirm, whatever they value gets replicated through the organization. And if you're gossiping about your supervisor or you're gossiping about your colleagues, you're actually training the people that work for you to do the very same thing. Don't be guilty of it. Be authentic. Again, alignment doesn't require agreement, but it does require commitment. The last question comes from Nathan Martin. Nathan?
This is Nathan Martin from soundwisdom.com in Pennsylvania. My question is, what do you do to foster teamwork among a team that is largely made up of virtual workers that are spread out geographically? Thanks, Mike.
Well, that's a great one too. And that's largely my situation today, where I've got everybody that's on my team right now. It's very much a virtual team. My virtual assistant, Trisha, lives in another city. My team members, one of my managers lives in Denver. One of them lives here, but we're not in the same office building. So I get this. I mean, I'm in the same situation today. But what I would say is that the same principles apply. You just have to work a little harder. You can't treat those people that are virtual as second-class citizens, like they're not also a part of the team. So you've got to work doubly hard to fold them in and to look for opportunities to connect with them, whether it's with Skype or conference calls or bringing them in for face-to-face meetings. All of that's critically important, and don't underestimate it. It's that first discipline, which is the one of contact. You've got to create an environment where you've got frequent contact with them if you're going to keep them aligned and working with you, not against you. So that's about all the time we have for questions. I do have a couple of announcements that I want to make. First of all, the platform book, my new book, is officially a bestseller. I am so pleased. It hit all the major bestseller lists last week, including Amazon Top Overall Books at number 4. It was the Amazon Top Marketing Book at number 1. It hit the New York Times list at number 12 on the hardcover advice list. And then it hit the USA Today best-selling books at number 92, which, by the way, that's a really hard list to hit because it's an amalgamation of everything. It's got fiction, nonfiction, children's, it's everything undifferentiated. So there are a lot of times in my past as a publisher where we had authors hit the New York Times list but didn't hit the USA Today list because, again, it's just one big list. Platform also was on the Wall Street Journal hardcover business best-selling books at number 5. So I couldn't be happier. I'm extremely grateful. Special shout out to the Platform launch team, a group of 100 people that signed on as volunteers to help get the word out. And to celebrate, I've got another special offer that I want to make to you. If you buy the book before the end of the day on Tuesday, June the 12th, which is a week from when this podcast goes live, you're going to get 3 free bonuses worth $110.97. So this isn't the same offer that I made previously. It's not quite as big of offer, frankly, but I think it's still compelling. But here's what you get. 3 bonuses worth $110.97, including bonus number 1, all 4 digital editions of the book. So if you buy the physical book, you get the Kindle, the Nook, the iPad, and a PDF. Bonus number 2, the unabridged audio of the book. So if you like to consume books the way that I do, which is listening to them when I'm running, this is a great way to do this. You can download these audio files, put them on your iPhone, your iPod, your iWhatever, and listen to them. Bonus number 3 is a video, a 45-minute video called Why Now is the Best Time Ever to Be an Author. And even if you've never thought about writing a book before, I don't know of a better way to build a platform than to write a book. It will do wonders for your business or for your ministry, and I explain why in that 45-minute video. So if you want to take advantage of this offer, again, it is going to expire on Tuesday, June the 12th, but you can go to michaelhyatt.com/podcast offer. There will not be a link in the show notes because this is an exclusive link to my podcast listeners. So I'm not making this available to just my blog readers, but this is available only to my podcast listeners and only, frankly, if you've made it this far in the podcast. So go to michaelhyatt.com/podcast offer. My upcoming speaking, I'm going to be at Blog World. In fact, if you're listening to this today on Wednesday when I released it, I'm going to be at Blog World on Thursday morning, June the 7th. I'll be speaking on platform, get noticed in a noisy world. I know it's a big surprise, but I'm going to be talking about platform in relationship to my new podcast and what I've been learning and kind of learning how to build a platform from the ground up as though it were the first time. Then I'm going to be speaking on June the 14th at the International Shelby Conference in Memphis, Tennessee, for those who use the Shelby software. And then the American Christian Fiction Writers Conference on September the 21st in Dallas. And a lot of private events, different banking events and corporate events that aren't open to the public in between. But if you're interested in having me speak to your event, go to michaelhyatt.com/speaking. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so that people who have never heard of it can discover it. If you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com/015 Go to the show notes for this episode and scroll down to the comments section. I'd love to hear from you. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. Are you